listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast, Asheville's premier soccer podcast. Guys, welcome back to another episode of You're Smarter Than Us. Guys, I'm very, very excited to have Dion DeGennaro on with me. Dion, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
Fantastic. Dion comes to us from the Great North, Detroit, part of the Northern Guard. Been very, very excited to talk to you, to talk about Detroit City, to talk, I'm actually kind of pulling off the kid's glove for this one, guys. You might have noticed that I've even put the big E on the podcast because, guys, we might use some adult language during the course of this episode.
I was totally going to ask about that.
Hadn't gone there yet, but...
I looked on your page and it's like, oh, it's clean lyrics. Okay. That's when I have to censor myself. But good. Yeah. Throw that big E on there for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Not only, I was looking through you guys' merch last week and I just fell in love. I even bought an F-bomb shirt for my fiance. You guys are just setting the standard. So Dion, let's dive right into it. Can you tell us a little bit about your history with Detroit City and how you kind of came connected to the club?
Yeah, for sure. So I heard about Detroit City FC and it's like even before its first season. It was word of mouth, right? So like everyone's around here like, oh, did you hear about that new team, Detroit City FC? And there was like rumors about like all the different places they might play and who, you know, was behind it. And like, is it going to become an MLS team? Like there was a lot of unknown. And, so I think I heard about it and it was like a watch party of some sort. And so people were talking about it and I Googled it and I'm like, oh, they have season tickets on sale. We knew that they were going to be playing somewhere in Detroit and season tickets were like $40. So I was like, $40, that's like fucking great price for season tickets for anything. So, bought them, went to the home opener. Actually, funnily enough, like the entire first season, I never once ventured over into the Northern Guard section because I didn't really know, my impression of like supporter sections comes from the South American style, like Bar Bravos groups. My family all lives in Argentina, so I was like, yeah, I don't really know if I want to be involved in that because I don't know what they're about. Like, I don't know anyone in there. I'm not going to go over there. So the whole first season, just kind of hung out, went to the games on the quieter side, and then, been like a season ticket holder since like probably March of, 2012.
And those first few games were at Cass Technical High School?
Yeah, so the first, the first three seasons were at, we called it Cass Tech, mm-hmm. or Estadio Cass Teca. and so, yeah, that it was a football field that was outside of Cass Tech, which was kind of a historic name in the city. It's kind of like an accelerated learning program within the city. And we played on their football field, which was very narrow and very short and very fourth division soccer. Very bumpy pitch, mud piles everywhere, sprinkler heads poking out. Like it was definitely fourth division soccer, but renowned for how narrow it was and how on top of the field the supporter section was. Mm-hmm. You're literally the sideline there was not 2 feet of space. So there was barely room for a linesman to run back and forth in front of the supporters and the sideline. And so we had a reputation for being loud and in players' faces on the sideline, and it kind of had a very intimidating reputation the 3 years that we were there.
And then you guys moved to Keyworth, but before you actually moved to Keyworth, can you kind of explain the Keyworth investment drive?
Yeah, so I actually was before we started podcasting, I was doing some old reading of the like press releases and like renderings of this investment campaign and kind of what they proposed. So it was October 29th, 2015, and the club announced a groundbreaking community investment campaign that was to finance the rehabilitation work at Keyworth. The place was in super bad shape, extreme disrepair. It was probably it was about 79 years old at that point. So it was built in the 30s from the Works Progress Act. Mm-hmm. It was actually, I believe, the first project of that of that act. And so it's not really been taken care of in the last 20, 30 years because the school district that that's in, which is actually Hamtramck, which is an enclave of Detroit, which means it's a city within a city. They didn't have a lot of money to really maintain it, so it went into extreme disrepair. And the club estimated that they would need about $750,000 to have it ready in time for the following season. So the investment campaign was 109 days long, and the goal was to get people to invest $750,000. The interesting thing about it was that it's allowed to happen through a law Michigan passed a couple years ago called the Michigan Invest Locally exemption, which allows like unaccredited investors to invest in community-based projects and to receive a return on that investment and still be able to use it in like Michigan's taxes. So like you get a form and I think it's technically like foreign investment interest is the tax form, which is really, but that's because this law is so new that there isn't like a specific form for it yet. So it allowed individuals to donate anywhere from $250 up to, I believe, $100,000. Actually, the law might have been I think it was $25,000, but they were accepting investments of $100 at the time.
You guys were investing in a city-owned property, though, just for the club?
Yeah.
That's exactly.
So the Hamtramck Public Schools actually still own
it. You guys have a lease on it.
Yeah, there's a 10-year lease on it, and it actually, it's a community-oriented investment campaign, and it's a law that has been passed in a couple different states, but there's only been, like, I remember at the time of when the campaign started, there'd only been like two or three other projects using this law, and they were nothing like this. It was maybe, you know, $2,500 investment campaign, not like you know, $750,000.
Yeah, it was a slide out of a playground or something along those lines.
Yeah, it was something like that. We had 109 days to get individuals to raise $750,000. And I remember when they first announced it, and they kind of like talked to us about it and ran it by us as like supporters before they officially announced it. But, you know, trying to get a feel for like, hey, do you guys think we could possibly actually do this? And the numbers that they initially gave us, which were not $750,000, were like, man, like we might be able to do that, but it would be tough. Like we can't see anything much more than that. And then they announced 750, and we're like, holy shit, like there's no. So the way the law worked was like you had to raise at least $400,000 to have the investment campaign go through. The reason why, I'm not really sure, I bet it has something to do with like percentages of projected investments. So you need to get X amount of percent before construction can start, because they don't know if they're going to have their money yet.
That makes sense.
So like the goal was to raise $400,000 as soon as possible so they could start construction, because they only had, I believe it was like 140 days before the season started, or approximately. Yeah. And so they had 109 days to do it. And so in 109 days, they got, and I want to get the final number here, $741,250. Which is pretty crazy. It's like less than 4 months,
in small contributions? Did you have a couple big, large like corporate contributions?
I don't believe they've made the breakdown contributions public. I don't know. Like, I know they sent out emails to investors breaking it down, but I don't think I can make that information public. The way the law works, it has to be, you can't like share financial info with people who are not investors.
That makes sense.
But if, to my recollection, I think there was two somewhat large investors, but not the max investment, and the rest came from like $250,000 investments.
That's phenomenal. And then your first game in that new stadium, ironically enough, 7,410 fans.
Yeah.
But there was a nice symmetry to that.
there's definitely some numerical symmetry there. I did want to talk about really quick too. People are probably wondering what the payout is on the investment, because a lot of times when people hear like crowdfunding, they think, oh, you're just kind of giving money away and that's because it's something you believe in and that's it. But the way that the investment works is they pay you out twice a year. And I believe the timeline is over 5 years, they will pay you back 1.35 times your initial investment, which is 35%. So it will be like 7% a year return on your investment, which is pretty good.
That is absolutely fascinating.
My favorite thing about it is everyone wins. The community wins because obviously you're renovating a new school, you're attracting new business, you're attracting more people into the area. The club wins because we had outgrown the previous place we played, and we actually couldn't sell alcohol at our first pitch. So that was another thing they really wanted to do. And then obviously the supporters win because you're getting return on your investment, you're supporting your club, and you're supporting your community.
So since you've moved there, has your attendance has also gone up? If I'm not mistaken, you guys made some pretty monumental leaps from Cass Tech to the new stadium, correct?
Yeah, the final season at Cass Tech, the total yearly attendance was something like, it was like 29,000. And then I don't know the numbers from this season. We haven't like crunched them all yet, but the total attendance of 2017 was 87,965, which is, you know, 30,000 to 90,000. It's almost three times increase of total attendance.
Yeah, the number I saw that for this year, this past year, was 5,946. And
okay.
As soon as I saw that, I raced to USL's attendance to see what they're doing. And that would have put Detroit City at ninth out of 33 teams above Tampa Bay, North Carolina, Richmond, Charleston, and Charlotte Independence, who all from 2017 to 2018 actually went down in attendance, whereas Detroit is just on a steady pace upwards.
Yeah, the attendance, the like average game attendance at Cass Tech, we were capped to have like 3,500 people approximately. It was 3,528, and then you said 2018 was 5,940 something.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, even the move to Keyworth allowed us to kind of have a huge percent increase in attendance. Absolutely.
So not only that, but I think much like we were just talking about with the investment, you know, of course, we could talk all day about like your U.S. Open Cup games against Louisville City, and we will kind of talk about the international friendlies. But of course, it's the community stuff. You know, we're talking about the investment from the community. But you guys are doing this Detroit Football League, the adult league. One game a season, you guys are pitching, I'm assuming, most of the revenue towards a charity. And I think my favorite thing I found out about you guys was that in 2014, what seems like a very like ubiquitous thing that almost all leagues do now with the LGBTQ jerseys that get auctioned off, Detroit City was actually the first one to do that. Can you tell us a little bit about how that came to be?
Yeah, so I don't know. This would be a great question for our front office. I don't know necessarily how that all came to be. But even prior to that, going back to the first season in 2012, Northern Guard actually used to have a charity called Hooligans for Heroes. And that actually might have been 2013. I don't remember off the top of my head. But the club has always kind of supported community investment, community initiatives, and local charities. And pretty much every year they do a specific game where they auction off game-worn jerseys, and merch and tickets and all sorts of stuff to donate to different charities. More recently, they've done charities that are focused around refugees and also at-risk women and girls. And because Hamtramck has a ton of immigrants. If I remember correctly, there are 31 different nations represented in 2 square miles. So there's actually a huge chunk of refugees in the Detroit area in Hamtramck. So obviously, wherever we move, community-wise, we try to support things that affect that community. So yeah, I mean, that's a staple of like a Detroit City season is there is a game where there's special jerseys. The first one was a camo jersey because it was Hooligans for Heroes, and then I believe there was the LGBTQ jersey, which had a rainbow equal sign on the front, and then my favorite one, and I'm totally blanking on the charity that it benefited, but they had an all black one, and that's kind of like, if you know Northern Guard, like we love black.
Yeah, my fiance's shirt is black. It's amazing. I love it. All right, so tell us a little bit about the Detroit City Fieldhouse. Literally minutes before I called you, I was looking through the Twitter feed one last time, and they actually had a quick little run through of it, of the video. Guys, if you have not gone out and seen this thing, go check it out. When we're talking about a community supporting a club, this is literally a community supporting a club, building a building for the community. It's fantastic.
So the Fieldhouse, I think, is one of the best ideas that the club has ever had. In a way, it's kind of like diversifying their investments, not only in themselves, but with the community as well. The hardest thing I think MPSL clubs have to deal with is like their business is only open for 3 months out of the year, and it can be really difficult to be sustainable, which I think is probably one of the most important things for lower division soccer is sustainability. And so kind of the way that I feel DCFC has always gotten around that is they joke about they created like a merchandise business or a t-shirt business, and they just happen to play soccer 3 months out of the year. That's how they've kind of grown their brand, stayed sustainable, able to grow, is because they've always had that to fall back onto. But I think for me, at least my personal opinion, is the Fieldhouse is their way of kind of protecting themselves in case they don't have a chance to go pro or they're stuck in the MPSL for whatever reason. They're not just relying on that to continue to be Detroit's soccer team. So yeah, this space is super awesome. I had a chance to walk into it kind of right when they first got it, and then I've popped in for along the way of renovation, like seeing the different fields being worked on, the bar being worked on. They're moving their club shop into the field house. There's going to be a restaurant in there, and there's two pitches. One will be a boarded pitch, and one will be, I believe, an 8v8 pitch. And the really cool thing about it is they just started Youth Select programs this year. And the Youth Select programs are low cost. And someone like a DCFC supporter who knew the numbers of the costs of this league compared them, and it's literally 10 times less expensive to play for a DCFC team than it is for another pay-to-play youth select travel team. Yes. I believe the pay-to-play fees were about $300, which personally, like, I think that's still really high for kids in the city, but it's a lot better than the $3,000 average.
Absolutely.
And so actually the even better part about the Youth Select program is the way it's funded. The funding of it this year, every sale of beer or any alcohol at the games, 100% of the profits went towards funding the Youth Select teams. So like we kind of had a motto at the start of the season. It was drink for the children. or if you're a Simpsons fan, will somebody drink for the children?
I love it.
So yeah, a lot of alcohol consumed for the kids at games this year.
All right, so I had a little section here where I wanted to talk about some different things, but I thought the easiest way maybe to just move a few of it and then use the tail of it to kind of transition and dovetail us into something else. Let's play a
Yeah,
little
that's cool.
word association, right? So
Oh, no.
I'm
This is
gonna
gonna get me
throw
in
some
trouble.
words at you, and you just tell me the first thing that comes to mind, and then with the last one, we'll kind of move on after that. All right?
Okay. Yeah,
All right.
sounds good.
FC Buffalo.
All right. But FC Buffalo is okay.
All right. AFC Cleveland.
Folded.
State of Ohio.
Fuck it.
AFC Ann Arbor.
Almost as bad as Ohio.
Windsor Stars. Michigan Bucks.
Oh, fuck those guys too.
And Chattanooga Football Club.
Soccer bros.
All right, so tell us a little bit about that. What is the bromance that's going on with you guys in Chattanooga?
They're just a bunch of really good group of people. Very good supporter group. Very friendly, hospitable. Polar opposite to Northern Guard. Completely different. Very little parallel between the two. But they're good people, and they're doing what they need to do for their club. I think there's kind of like two schools of thought to supporting. There's the hardcore school of thought, and there's the support your club no matter what, whatever. That, I mean, it's there were two separate schools of thought, but we do both of those really well. I think that's, and like, so I'm trying to remember the quote, like, game recognizes game. Like, that's how I think we feel about Chattanooga.
And how do you feel about what's happening to them with the USL D3?
Oh man. So they had a press conference today where they announced the coach. And to be honest, I didn't listen to it live. I after it was wrapped up, I went on Facebook and I like started playing the video, and I skipped through it. And I probably listened to 38 seconds of the whole thing, and it was like 20 minutes long, and like I really couldn't get through any more of it, because like the thought of USL D3 going to Chattanooga just, it like makes me sick. Like I can't even begin to describe to you like how upset it makes me that they're totally like carpet bagging, and like there's people that are eating it up, and it's super frustrating for us, because we know how much time and how much energy and how much the Chattahoogans care about their club. If I mean, we've kind of dealt with interlopers or carpet bagging here from day one, in regards to different millionaires or billionaires proposing MLS is going to be a Detroit team. And we're like, well, no, fuck that. Like, we want to be Detroit's team. We've been here first. We're trying to build the club to be professional and to be Detroit's soccer team. To have billionaires come in who don't care about the sport, don't care about the community, don't care about the club that existed there in the first place. They just want to take the success that we have created and use it for themselves to either be a tax write-off or tax incentive or real estate deal is incredibly, incredibly frustrating. And so it like really makes me upset that USL is trying to do this in Chattanooga.
You know, you guys had that Rose Bowl game, or not Rose Bowl, listen to me, Big House
The
game
big house.
over the summer that was the most attended soccer game in U.S. history. Obviously, you guys are primed that market, but are they soccer fans, or do you see them as Detroit City fans?
I think, I mean, you asked me a lot right there. So I think the big house games are not really representative of the soccer community in Southeast Michigan. I feel like it's an event, right? Everyone wants to be a part of the largest soccer game in the world, or the largest soccer game in the country, or whatever the stat is. And I know a lot of people that went because it was an event, and it was something, you know. Or there's a lot of fans of Liverpool and Manchester United. Like, fucking people are coming in from all over to see that. So I don't necessarily think that the people that go to something like that are really there's going to be a percentage of them that are going to be like the market for the team. Like those are going to be the future fans. But I think in a situation like that, it's not really representative of the soccer community. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as parallels, I mean, absolutely there are parallels. As I would say with Chattanooga, I think I don't really know a lot about the Greenville situation. From what I understand, like you said, it's a relatively new NPSL team. Their mindset going into it was community oriented, grassroots. If I remember hearing correctly, they kind of looked to like a Chattanooga or a DCFC for inspiration, but that's also kind of like, that's the line that every club uses because those are the benchmarks, you know, like everyone wants to be the next Detroit or the next Chattanooga or the next Atlanta, but people, I think, don't necessarily realize how much it takes to get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the thing that kind of surprised me about the Greenville stuff is I had seen maybe like two or three people on social media that were really upset about it and kind of were looking for the same support that like the Stand with Chattanooga stuff had. But on the other, I saw way more people that were like totally embracing the idea of having these two teams here. And I don't really understand why. I don't know a lot about the Greenville soccer scene, so I don't, maybe you can enlighten me. I know you guys are a lot closer. But to me, I don't think that those two things can coexist. I'm not even sure, like, what's the population of Greenville? Like, is it comparable to a Chattanooga? Is it like 100,000, 150,000, or is there more than that?
It's probably around that if you consider the entire metro area. Yeah, I'm not quite sure how anybody expects that sort of environment to support two separate clubs, potentially running concurrently during the summer. And until a stadium gets built, they might even have to share Furman, which from all I can tell, I don't necessarily think the USL, I know the USL doesn't allow stadium sharing. Apparently D3 might.
Allegedly D3 will.
Yeah. So I don't know if somebody's going to have to move to a baseball stadium eventually or what's going to happen with that. But, Greenville's Greenville. Greenville's a lot like Asheville. We've only got so much extra money to go. And I think if you're going to try to start splitting between two season tickets, going and, two Ubers, two sets of beers, season ticket kits or whatever, scarves or whatever it is, it's going to start to get hairy.
Yeah. To me, the idea of supporting multiple clubs is like sacrilegious. Like I can't make myself support two different soccer teams in the same area. Like to me, that's like the antithesis of what it means to be a supporter. It just, you can't, I give 100% to DCFC. Like there's no way I could give any of that to another club in the area. And I don't see how people can do that. It's probably my warped perspective of like the soccer scene, but to me, it just makes no sense. We get made fun of, or at least, not so much anymore, but like Northern Guard for a really long time got made fun of because we said, we're only going to support DCFC. Like that's our club. It doesn't matter if they're fourth division. It doesn't matter if another club comes in that is, quote, better because it's pro, but we have our club. And then so you have people that are like, oh, well, don't you want to grow the game? And to me, it's like, well, what are we doing? Aren't we doing that by supporting our club and creating this thing that, now 6-7 years later is investing in real estate to make low cost soccer? Like to me, like if Northern Guard hadn't been behind the club 100%, it wouldn't be where it's at today. And so even it doesn't matter what the league is or if it's pro or if it's not pro, like the whole idea, why a team like Detroit or why a team like Chattanooga is successful is because they have supporters that understand what it means to support the club. Like literally you have to give it your all. And that's kind of true with any grassroots project. Like you're going to give more than you probably should, because you believe in it and you want it to be successful.
So what is the next step for Detroit? What can you kind of explain a little bit between, I read just a quick interview with Sean Mann. Is that right?
Yeah, that's our GM and one of the five original co-founders of the
Okay,
team.
so and Sean was basically saying, you know, we want to go pro. It will be disappointing if in 2019 we're not pro, but the NPSL is a safe home. It's not a step back. It's kind of keeping the status quo. But you guys have to have different options. You know, I know even Detroit's been spoken about as a potential USL D3 town. Maybe not with Detroit City, but they might be
that
looking.
That would be the Michigan Bucks, yeah.
Okay. The NISA?
NISA.
Yeah.
So the funny thing is about NISA is at the time that stuff started to kind of leak out about NISA, it was probably early 2017, Detroit City was going to be one of the founding members. And to us at the time, once stuff started getting announced, and you're like, oh yeah, they're like pro rel, international calendar, like all the boxes were checking, right? Like it was pro team, pro rel, sustainable pyramid, blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't until later that, like, at least me personally, I was like, this is starting to sound like a little too good to be true. And then they had some serious setbacks in the people that were running it. You know, Wilt had to leave. He stepped away. And then one of the other man, who I'm totally blanking on his name, but he passed away, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like at the time when it was first kind of announced, we were pretty hyped for the idea of NISA. And the other, I think, at least, again, I can only speak for myself. I don't intend to speak for everyone in Northern Guard, because there are a lot of us and we all have varied opinions. But at least in my opinion, NISA, as long as they're trying to play by the professional league standards, even if it's successful, it's not going to be as revolutionary as it needs to be. Kind of feels like they're just trying to play by the rules, or, you know, it's like a group of millionaires that weren't cool enough to sit at USL's table, whether it was because they didn't have the right connections or enough money or whatever, you know, not the right market, because I know USL is all about markets. So, like, for whatever reason, I feel like these cities are, you know, weren't cool enough to sit at the USL kids table. So they were like, oh, well, we'll just, you know, start our own table group. And that's kind of what it feels like. And to me, the Federation, depending on what happens with NASL's lawsuits, whether they win those lawsuits or, you know, the Cosmos stop trying to pursue, what's going to stop the Federation from stripping NISA's sanctioning in 2 or 3 years? Just because they decided that, oh, you know, you're not meeting these standards. Who knows if they change at that point? It might become even harder. I don't know. But to me, it just, with how I feel personally about the Federation and collusion between MLS and USL, I don't really see us trying to create something within that pyramid or within that structure as a good decision, which kind of brings us to the next option, which is MPSL Pro.
And can you explain how that's punk rock if USL is soft rock and USDL is yacht rock, which is,
man,
my favorite thing
people
I've seen on Twitter
not,
in
yeah,
months.
Yeah, people should not, like, take my dumb Twitter jokes seriously. But, like, that was a good one, I guess.
Oh, it's a thing. Detroit City Twitter, like, is, like, a scene that gets mentioned in our Slack channel in North Carolina.
Oh, my God, I keep hearing about this Slack channel. I, like... Before you had me on, I, like, was listening to the Chattanooga podcast, and yeah, you guys were talking about that Slack channel all the time. I'm like, that's some really good conversation happens in there. So MPSL Pro, right? It's like the worst kept secret in lower division soccer right now. Nothing has been officially announced as of recording. I don't think we'll hear anything till, from what I've heard, October. But what we do have is, like, leaks and rumors and hearsay and, like, speculation.
Pictures of Dennis
and
Crowley
and
at arcades
and, like,
in New York City.
Yeah. Yeah, Dennis Crowley, and they're all drunk. Yeah, definitely. Like I said, worst kept secret in the world of soccer right now. So I guess the idea about what makes it punk rock is they're not going to be a part of their system, right? The idea allegedly behind it is going to be they're going to create a pro league out of the confines of the Federation's pro structure. They're not going to play by professional league standards. They're one, I guess, theory, because again, as far as I know, like nothing has been announced officially, but the theory is that they're going to seek sanctioning through USASA, which is the United States Adult Soccer Association, if I remember my acronyms correctly. And so they don't necessarily need to play by the Federation's standards. The Federation can't prevent them from paying their players. Like, that's a law. Like, you can't tell a company that they're not allowed to pay their employees. Mm-hmm. And so I guess the biggest hang up when it comes to MPSL Pro versus ANISA or USL is going to be, but I forgot what the exact term is, but it's like FIFA eligible players. Allegedly, if you create a rogue league outside of a federation system, your players cannot be FIFA registered and can't play for their respective national teams. But the, again, theory behind what will allow them to actually be FIFA compliant is that they'll be seeking sanctioning through an association of the federation. So again, this is all, none of this has ever been tried before. So we're simply guessing at this point. Another, I think, issue that people are speculating there's going to be is like work visas. There are different types of visas for athletes, and one is relatively easy to get and one is super hard to get. The easy one is you have to have affiliation with either a federation or you have to like show that they're going to be full-time employees. And then the harder one is you just have to apply and hope they get it. So there's work visa like problems that they might have to find their way around. But again, there's theories as to why that won't matter or why that will matter. I don't really want to get into them because I don't know them enough to really have an opinion about them. But it's an entirely new frontier of not playing by the rules, basically.
Do you think Detroit's ready to make that jump to have, I mean, what do you guys have? I think 6 home games. Now you have the international friendlies,
yes,
which I mean are amazing. You want to talk about those real quick?
Yeah, we can talk about the friendlies really quick. It started out with the move to Keyworth. Mm-hmm. The first team we played, international friendly, we played other than like a Windsor Stars, was FC United of Manchester, which for like the soccer hipster listeners, is a pretty well-known club, but you might not have heard of them. They were formed by a bunch of disenfranchised Manchester United fans when the Glazers bought the Americans bought Manchester United and ran them into the ground, essentially. They stopped supporting Manchester United. I think some of them still do, but they started their own supporter-owned club. And so the idea was every year we were going to have like a friendly with a club from another country that had similar ideals to what we had. Mm-hmm. So like, I'm trying to remember all the, hold on, I'm going to pull up all the friendlies we've had because there's so many games.
Yeah, the FC St. Pauli one was the one that
that's the big
off
one, right?
The page off me. Well, not just that, but I mean, especially because what you were talking about in terms of sharing ideals and sharing philosophies, I think those hit very, very close together and hit close to home, hand in glove.
Yeah, absolutely. So we had FC United of Manchester. We had Glentoran FC, which is a Northern Irish team. We had Venezia FC, which kind of gained like cult following, because they were bought out by an American guy and they were trying really big, like really hard to grow their brand here. So we played them last year. And then this year we have actually 3 international friendlies. Obviously FC St. Pauli, which was the one that kind of everyone was excited for. Then we played a first division, Liga MX team called Club Necaxa. It might be pronounced differently because I believe it's like Aztec or something like that, so I don't know the pronunciation. And then Frosinone Calcio, which is a Serie A team. They had just been promoted to Serie A right before they came to visit us. So yeah, this year with FC St. Pauli, it was another surprise for us. We knew that it was going to be a big team, but we didn't know who. And like, people were jokingly speculating that it was going to be St. Pauli because, like, why the fuck would St. Pauli come play us? Why would they do that? So I think there was a not like a press release, but there was like a talk on the future of soccer in America and how it should be community driven. And so it was a panel of the FC St. Pauli owner, our owner, a couple different authors, and then one of our supporters. And so they talked about kind of the importance of the club and the community, and then the importance of supporters with the club and the community. And it was one of the best talks. Someone recorded it, and it was, I believe it was about an hour long. Great panel. Definitely, you get some background on like how the friendly happened, and the details of like how that deal came about as well. But if I memory serves me correctly, it was something like FC St. Pauli had heard of us, but they didn't really know a lot about us. And I believe someone like shot them an email, like, "Hey, we're this club. Like, we're interested in playing you. Let us know." They didn't really hear about it for a while. And then they were looking at potential friendlies, and they were going through the list, and they were like, "Oh yeah, well, what about Detroit City FC?" And so as they did some research and started learning about us, they're like, "Oh fuck yeah, like, this is totally the kind of thing like that we're talking about and what we're about, and we want to go see it and be a part of it." And so they actually had like a whole tour. They're sponsored by Under Armour, so like, they visited Under Armour's headquarters. Forgot where that was. Doesn't really matter to me because it's not Detroit. And then they played the Portland Timbers 2, which to me is like kind of like a slap in the face. Like, really? Like, you're not, it's fucking St. Pauli. You're gonna make him play your like B team. Like, it's like you're above the friendly with St. Pauli. Like, come on. And then they played us before they went over to Portland. And they put out like a really cool like video documentary. Actually, the Bundesliga did the work, so they had like Bundesliga cameras at Keyworth filming this documentary, which was surreal. And then, so like, yeah, they put out this documentary, and to be honest, like, seeing them in Portland versus seeing them in Detroit, like, they had a way better time in Detroit. I'm just like, fuck yeah. Like, we made it. We did it.
That's awesome.
It was always like, you know, I think that's been the benchmark, right? Like, we're the benchmark for like lower division clubs, or Chattanooga is the benchmark for lower division clubs, but like, for us to one day be like a St. Pauli, like, that's our goal, right? Like, we want to create something like that, and to have them acknowledge what we're building and saying like, yes, you guys are doing it, like, I think that was huge.
Yeah, you guys are well on your way. So last thing, if we're going to talk NPSL Pro, I think the biggest thing that we always hear about, you know, there was that document that's floating around, the USL D3 kind of like breakdown. Have you seen that? Of like what a club is expected to pay?
No. Was that on like Sock Takes or something like that?
I think Sock Takes had it for a second. I think it was on USL Reddit for a minute, but it basically like broke down the budget of a USL D3 team, and it had it kind of like a low and a high. So somewhere between like 1.5 million and 2.5 million yearly like operating budget. So,
okay.
You know, every time I mention this on Twitter, or I say it to, you know, one of the other Celso Blues, you know, what is this? What does this mean? How do you go from, you know, we've got 7 home games a year. I think you guys only have 6.
Is that right? I believe the past season we had 6 regular season home games. And like, I think we had like a total of 12 games at home total though, between friendlies and preseason and Open Cup.
So how do you go from that level of revenue to being to you know, maybe twice as many games, but having to pay your players, travel to, I mean, potentially you're talking like New Orleans, you know, is talking NPSL Pro, maybe out west. I know they've talked about maybe different divisions and then going into playoffs. How does Detroit, how does the Northern Guard kind of conceptualize that?
Well, I'm going to answer your question by asking you another question. What do you think DCFC's operating budget is right now?
$1 million?
$1.5 million.
There we go.
So even right now at the level that we're at, they're still at the low end of what would be needed for a USL D3 team. I think with increased games and potentially increased season ticket costs or individual game costs, increased alcohol revenue, increased everything, and it's the way that our club has been built, it's very scalable. So we're already at the point right now where it makes sense for us to go pro, even though we're still playing within NPSL. With increased games, if we doubled the amount of games, that would cover the cost of paying players right there, without even having to increase ticket prices for an quote increased quality of play. So, you know, a club like ours, I don't really feel like it's going to have a lot of trouble with that. Again, I only speak for myself. I don't speak for the whole group. But I think a lot of work has been done to kind of get it to this point and grow it in a way that's sustainable and scalable. So, for us, it kind of makes sense. Like, even if we had to join a new league that is a brand new idea, I think we're going to be okay.
I love it. It's that punk rock, do it yourself, let it happen organically, don't force it, earn it, don't buy it.
Yeah, it was all started by five guys, $2,000 each, and here we are.
That's the dream, man. Dion, thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on. I cannot say how much I hope that eventually Asheville and Detroit kind of run across each other in some form or fashion. I'd love to make it up there. I'd love for you guys to come down here, whether it be in the NPSL or maybe hopefully in the NPSL Pro one day, sir.
That would be awesome. Can't wait. Like, I'm so pumped for the future. Like, it's going to be really exciting, I think.
All right. Well, thank you so much and hope to have you back on sometime soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast, a proud member of the Soccer and Sweet Tea Network. Check us out on social media at your_smarter or shoot us an email at your_smarter_than_us@gmail.com.